Empire of the Suns.
Suns. Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zierman. Some things never change. We are finally recording from the studio, but Kevin is always terrified that the computer is not going to work properly because longtime listeners will know that our podcast randomly hitches from time to time, a problem that has since probably gone away in the past couple of months. Well, if it comes back now, we are back in the Arizona Sports Studios. We are safely socially distancing. They got a new computer in here and no one told us, which is like Christmas. I'm so tired, but I got so much energy just now. This is awesome.
You can't tell people there's a new computer in the recording studio because then they'll just all come back, and we don't want to do that now, except late at night after a D-backs game.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, so I the editing job of the site hasn't been so bad during all of this, and even when like the games have been going on at once, but I just asked if it was okay for me to come in during a couple of these days where it's like the Suns play at 1 and the D-backs play at 4. So there have been a couple that I've come into. This is like the third time I've been in. This is the first time you've been into the office since the Rudy Gobert day, or whatever you want to call it, right? First day? How do you feel?
I think so. I mean, I've been in to like pick up a computer, but...
Oh, yeah, I did come in here to do that too, I think. Yeah, I did. Huh.
Very weird. It was like driving here. It was like, oh, I'm driving to work now. Haven't done that.
Yeah, same thing. And like just driving on freeways, because everything I need in terms of like shopping and stuff, I don't need to take a freeway. And like the friends that I've gone to see, not on freeways. So it's just weird to do that now. Not as weird as the Suns starting off 4-0 in the bubble, though. I just kind of wanted to start. How do you feel about all of this in general? Because I don't want to exaggerate and say it doesn't feel real, but it's kind of hard to grasp the amount of interest there is in the team. And I don't just mean like national people starting to like come into Zoom calls and tweeting about the team now. And like the Suns actually legitimately are the story of the bubble. Now they're 4-0. The Raptors are the only other undefeated team in the bubble right now. So without a doubt, they're the story, and they're the one team that has proven that someone was going to take advantage of this opportunity to get better and not just use it to warm up before the playoffs, essentially, and that was the Suns. So how do you feel about all this happening? Because I quote tweeted my like one of my last tweets from the Pistons game, which you'll remember, Brandon Knight scored 16 or 19 points in that game, and that was the most points he had scored in nearly 4 years. And the last time he scored that many points was when he was on the Suns nearly 4 years ago. That was after losing to the Warriors 2 days before at home in back-to-back losses. So just to that was a low, and that was like one of the lowest lows of the past couple of years, in my opinion, just because it felt like the Suns were kind of getting somewhere. It's like, nope, they're still the Suns. So to like be there a couple of months ago, which feels like 14 years ago now,
but to be back here now, that was,
yeah, it was February 28th, actually. Okay. It's stuck in my head for some reason, but to get here now, I'm sure for the people listening and fans, it feels weird. It just feels strange for them to be the talk of the town, to just see how many more people are like interacting on Twitter, because we can't gauge the people around, obviously, because we're not in the arena at games. But yeah, that was my long-winded question to you, but I just feel weird.
I think the Suns always play here. Like, I'm going to get backlash from Coyotes fans and Cardinals fans and D-backs fans, maybe. But this team always has that, like, if they are half relevant, people will be interested. And I think we're getting that now, and it's super just amplified because of we didn't have sports at all. And this team, even this year, was not super great. And I think they weren't that good, and they have absolutely, like, I don't know how to take, I don't want to be negative here, I don't know how, not like their wins aren't legit. I don't know what it means for next year and like how good they'll be. I haven't thought that far, maybe, but I feel like they definitely have won absolutely and look like the best prepared team in the bubble, because they spent the last month plus treating this like I don't know. It just seems like every other team's trying to figure out, okay, we had these guys injured. We're putting them back in pieces. Clippers are figuring stuff out. Like, Pacers don't have all their guys healthy. Lakers and Bucks are just whatever. The Nets are tanking, even though that's not a real thing now. Like, this team is the best prepared team in the bubble. Maybe the Raptors could challenge them, but I think we can say that for sure. And I don't know, like, this is an awful situation we're in as a society, but I just think that people are gravitating toward a team that, like, do you think Monty Williams is a good coach? Absolutely. And we've come to that conclusion, and he's absolutely proved it just with this extra time and this weird circumstance we have. So I think people just, all of that said, got really excited, and for good reason. Like I said, I don't want to, like, say this is not legit at all, because it's absolutely legit.
Totally. There's too much going on to mention everyone the way that they should be. The way that I describe this, I was on Gina's podcast the other day, and there are a lot of situations and for different teams where campaigns play would be the story of the bubble for them. Or Cam Johnson, who had like another quiet like 16 and 12 or whatever today in the starting lineup. Mikel's play, but I believe that Devin's play is the story so far. It's not just the fact that he's playing the way that he normally has and even better in front of like all these people in the biggest games of his career. It's just the fact that I would have these games where they were within three or whatever, or up five, and the other team had just made a 6-0 run, and I would just be like, okay, this is time for Devin to like close up shop. And he's never been able to consistently do it because it's extremely hard to do consistently. Guys just don't do what Kawhi and Dame and the other like kind of closers you think of. I guess Harden probably qualifies as that guy. I don't know if like Giannis and LeBron like have that reputation as like clutch performers consistently, and I'm not like digging at them as players. I'm just saying, like, who do you think of when you think of closers? Kawhi and Dame are the first two that come into my mind.
KD.
Yeah, KD is a good one. That's a good shout. People are going to mention like four off in their head right now that we're forgetting. But he has now, in four straight games, effectively closed the game. There was a 7-0 run in the Washington game where that was just a sloppy nonsense game for the most part that was not exactly what we were looking for, besides the fact that they worked super hard. And everyone kind of did their part. And he just went on his own 7-0 run over like 90 seconds and was like, nah, this game's over. The Dallas game, he had his own little 7-0 run that was more towards the first half of the fourth quarter than the second half, so he didn't effectively end the game. The Clippers game, obviously, he set up DeAndre for a dunk, I think. He set up DeAndre for something, and then he hit that ridiculous jumper over Reggie Jackson, and then he hit the more ridiculous jumper over Paul George and Kawhi Leonard. And then in this game, he had a 12-5 run where the bench put him in a great job to do it, and he was like, yeah, I got it. And then he did, I believe it was like a 14-5 run. Mikel scored a mid-range jumper off his own three-point miss, and then it was DeAndre's block on Malcolm Brogdon. Devin found him on the way back. And my favorite play of the entire bubble so far is like extremely specific, which won't surprise anyone, was when Devin got the ball on a rotation on the left wing, and it was clearly like you should keep passing it to Ricky because the defense is still recovering, but he just pump faked and shot it, and it was like, yes, you need to be that guy more, because I feel like he is trying so hard to win and trying so hard to like play within Monty's system and be a 0.5 guy that he's probably been the least aggressive we've seen him in terms of just every time he's okay with deferring to his teammates. And this is not calling him out saying he's not a guy who'll step up. He'll obviously step up, but he just wants his teammates to get there with him. And you were saying, I believe it was you or someone else, I can't remember, but this is like the most we've seen him like willingly look for his teammates consistently all the time. And with that in mind, he was like, screw this, like, I'm not passing the ball. I'm taking the shot to put us up 13 and pretty much seal the game right here because I'm that guy. And he needs to be that guy for him to go from a guy who's like a top 15, 20, 25 player, wherever you want to put him now, to a top 10, to a top 5 guy in the league. And he's starting to be, like, the thing I wrote today was, the tagline was like, he's the NBA's next great closer, because in four straight games, the four most meaningful games he's ever played in, he has effectively closed out all four of them. And I think that's the biggest story more than anything else. But to something that do you have anything to say on Devin first?
I mean, you just triggered back. Do you remember like first five games of the season?
The preseason, we were like, what's going on?
This guy is like trying too hard. He's not having that killer. Monty's kind of, and like, I think we all assumed at the time, like, okay, let's just hope he's trying to figure out, okay, where do I pick my spots? I need to buy in right now. My teammates will buy in. And I don't even think before the break he figured it out completely. But he looks absolutely like, to me, a different player in terms of, like you just said, when to take that three instead of pass. When to, all right, I'm going to pull it out and ISO you and I'm going to drive on you. And your teammates can't help but help because they don't want me to score and I'm just going to make the... It seems easy, the easy reads. Like the Mikal mid-range that you mentioned late in the game that he got his own rebound, like he shot a corner three that Book set up, right? I think so. So
yes,
that one was one of those where it's like Book's going to make the right play and he's going to trust his teammates to be in the right spots and they're all like, they're clicking together and they get it. So to me, I agree with you in the Book taking another leap and really just learning how to control and command games. And that's learning the mix of scoring versus when to trust his teammates. And obviously, we talk about he can't do this all alone. Well, he's making the right choices about when and when not to.
Charles Barkley, apparently on NBA on TNT. Get the kids out of the house. My sons are on fire. Stay golden, Chuck. And that's kind of where I was going to go with it, is that this, him taking this next step in his career is not possible without him getting enough help. And I just kind of felt like that was the biggest story, which was not fair at all to Dario Saric and Campaign making their own 23-3 run in under 5 minutes, where it was literally those two scored all 23 points in under 5 minutes that pretty much won them the game. But I feel like they got you to a certain point and then Devin got there, and that's how I felt about that. But to take it into like a whole thing and something else I wrote about in there, like again, defensively, you took some flack on Twitter for saying that DeAndre didn't have that great of a game. Kevin, I agreed with you to like some extent. I think I disagree a little bit, but I still think that I thought that was his best game in the bubble, but in the same way that you thought it wasn't like his, like one of his greater games or whatever, because he made, it was one of those games, I think he missed a rotation or something at the end of the first half, and the thought came into my head like, oh man, this is like the DeAndre we thought about pre-draft, where he's just going to make a ton of mistakes, but he's going to produce enough still for it to just kind of be a trade-off. And then that turned into the second half where he just made, and then the handful of really good defensive plays that he made early in the game, I think added up to his best overall game in the bubble, which isn't saying much, by the way, because I was the number one person to say that I didn't even think he was that good in the Wizards game. I basically kept copping out and saying he had a great second half because the first half was like unacceptable, 1,000,000%. But he, the thing with me is that he made like 4 to 6 to 8 plays where it was just impactful. It changed a possession on its own, and it wasn't just him catching his fallaway jumper in rhythm or that baseline fade that he likes or anything like that. It was mostly on defense, the Brogdon block and then the dunk coming down, or like two right there, where it was like that sequence alone was like, we just haven't seen him do that enough in big games late, except for games where he like played well almost the entire time. And just like kind of finding his way to like wiggle in there and make an impact. And then of course like him defensively, and then Mikal on TJ. I thought it was a real team effort just watching back TJ's night on the stats after. And there were just a lot of like double team and triple teams that came as he was shooting. Yeah. They just did a really good job of making sure to get extra hands up to contest him if they were around. That was clearly a point of emphasis for them. But then Mikal just had a handful of possessions where he was just a nuisance and just really great. So to take it back to Devin, like he probably can't win that game if Mikal's not on TJ, if DeAndre's not making those plays, and then if the bench didn't have that huge run, and then if like Cam Johnson's not rebounding the way he did probably. So the fact that he has enough, and like I want to give the team credit for playing well, but just meeting the threshold of what Book needs to be this guy is such a monumental achievement for them. That's probably the wrong way to say it because I'm giving them too much credit for something they should have been doing a while ago already. But with that in mind, it's a monumental step forward, I guess I should say. Because if you can put your best player in a position to win the game more times than not, you're going to be a playoff team probably with how good he is. And like this is obviously like the best he's ever looked. He's been awesome in these four games. He took 12 shots in this game and controlled it the entire time.
Can we talk about Monty? Because like I think we could all agree that DeAndre, Mikal, like you, I would have put money on them being reliable, I guess, next to Book. Because we already knew that. We already kind of saw that. I think even during the scrimmage games, we were just like, oh man, this bench just doesn't have any pop when, you know, especially when you're missing Kelly and Baines. And then you realize when Monty came into the actual seeding games, he was like not messing around. He was done playing with Ty Jerome. He was done trying to see if Elia Kobo's ready to go. He's just like, campaign, you're in. And he was, Cam Johnson, you're starting. And Dario, I'm going to play you. I'm going to need you to be super aggressive off the bench. This is what's going to happen. And suddenly he has this rotation that we didn't see even in the scrimmage games. And it works really well, even though that bench is at times going to go cold offensively. I think that Monty deserves a ton of credit just for like seeing those things, but being so sure about it. And then obviously like this team buys in, and again, it looks like the crispest team outside the Raptors maybe, and in flashes the Clippers and in flashes the Bucks, but like over four games, this is the most consistent team.
It's funny they beat the Pacers because me and you, and like mostly me, but like you'll chime in and agree every now and then that like one of our favorite teams to watch across the league has always been the Pacers, and it's because of the way the Suns are playing right now. And that Victor Oladipo, outside of that one season, it was never one of those things where you watch them and are like, this is a great individual performance. You just always watch them and are like, God, they play hard. They play so hard.
They get you, like the old Suns would just get, you'd shove them and then they'd get upset. They'd whine at the refs or something. And like, they were the team that made the Pacers look uncomfortable, right? Like, that's crazy to me. And I know it could have been an off game. It probably was, but...
But the fact that they did it to the Pacers, who is like, that's the team they should be trying to emulate. Yeah, the Pacers are like the perfect example of like, even if you don't have like a top 10, top 15 player, and certainly like right now they don't with Oladipo, they have like a couple of really great players, don't get me wrong. But with that being said, it's just like they clearly know their system and just work super hard every time they're playing. And like that's who the Suns are playing as. To go back to Monty, outside of it being entirely predictable when Igor got fired that Monty was going to be the Suns head coach and James Jones was going to get his guy, that like spooked me a little bit. When he was doing his intro presser and he said that he had really learned from his time in New Orleans in terms of how hard he was on young players and like just his like sternness. I'm really blanking right now, but there's a coach who is like notorious. Is it Jaeger? Who's like notorious for like, once you're on my blank list, you're gone. I like Larry Brown is obviously like the top historical example. There's a recent head coach I'm thinking of that like, once he hates you, like you're never playing again, basically. And Monty was like some sort of version with that in New Orleans, and there were a lot of like rotational question marks with him. And the reason I'm bringing that up right now is because now that the Suns are playing in meaningful games, that was kind of the problem. Once the Pelicans got to the certain point, it just seemed like Monty wasn't really the type of coach that could take them beyond that level. He could get them to like the playoffs and get them to be competitive, but his in-game coaching, and then there were a couple of rotational things that at least I remember from my brief time watching the Pelicans during those, and that was the consensus on Monty as a coach that prevented him from being a great coach in a lot of people's eyes. I haven't noticed one thing in these four games so far that has made me like worry about like in-game decision-making. It seems like I was foolish for thinking like, oh, like I'm sure you've like, everyone can say they've learned from their mistakes or whatever, but it genuinely seems like he is like, how many coaches would have just brought Book back in when that timeout got called and the Suns were up two, or brought back in Rubio or brought back in Ayton? And I asked him about that. I was like, what were you thinking? And he like, I phrased it the wrong way, so he thought I was talking about like pulling Ayton too early. But I was basically saying like, all three of your main guys are out, they take a timeout. Like, what are you thinking through your head? Are you thinking, like, I got to bring one of these guys back in, the game's getting away from us, anything? And he was like, I just have to trust the bench, because if I trust them, that's going to give them confidence, and it's going to give the starters confidence, and that'll pay off eventually. So I just got to do that. And that was like a really good example of just, on top of campaign pain playing out of his mind and just Monty believing that that'll come eventually. We'll get to him in a bit. But, man, I am... It was weird to go through this season with all the downs and like the Pistons Warriors thing, for example, and still feel, when I was talking about the team in March and April on like radio interviews and whatever, and just still saying like they're trending in an upward direction and like this is going to work out if they just stick the course with this. But now it's like an even better thing where we shouldn't talk about like... is it going to be a headache to talk about like trying to project them in the playoffs next year? Because if you haven't just looked at the Western Conference standings and pictured all these teams fully healthy back next season, like
it's, we do it every year, though.
Yeah. And then there's going to be a couple teams that drop out, like the Grizzlies with Conley and Gasol just randomly. We're like, that's it. We're done. We're going to be one of the worst teams in the league all of a sudden, and we're just going to blow it up. So that happens every year. So I don't really want to get to that or whatever, that kind of conversation, but I just think that they are certainly, to take it back to the biggest problem, like if Devin isn't sure it's going to work out here in Phoenix, if he wasn't before, which he shouldn't have been, he should feel pretty confident now. And that's a huge deal. And to one more thing before I stop talking, finally, Javier, who writes a bunch of draft stuff, I'm blanking on his Twitter handle right now, but you know him if you know him. He's on like draft Twitter and everything. He pretty much tweeted out a list of, here are the guys who, for sure, based on what we've seen, have top 5 to 7 potential, meaning like they could be one of the 5 to 7 best players in the league. So you got like Trey, Zion, Luka, Tatum, Book, and that's pretty much it. If you're going off strictly what you've seen, and then I argued you could maybe toss Ja in there, maybe Shea, and he was just saying like, yeah, like you could, but if you had to like really bet on it. And like that's the type of player they're dealing with. So not only can they not screw this up, it's just you got to meet the threshold, like I said, and they're meeting it, which is just like with their coach, with their front office so far, like everything so far seems to be going in the right direction. And that's where my PTSD starts to kick in and wonder what's going to go wrong. But for now, it's great.
It's hard to screw it up. And I think they're realizing like, okay, we just got to get settled in and just put competent coaches in, put competent role players in next to Book. Ayton's going to be really good. He is really good. And let's just roll it out there and like try to get better. And I, as much as we talk about their off the court dealings and their weird drafting apparent preferences, like
they don't have a G League team.
They don't have a G League team. Like, we're still at the point where it's like, I don't think James Jones has done anything that was incredibly terrible. Like, the TJ Warren thing was not good. And we don't want to get into that now, but it could go a lot worse. You could have gotten rid of a really good player and not gotten a good player who helps you back. I don't know. I think this is a good point where they're not the laughing stock anymore. Very clearly. Like,
all we've been asking for on this podcast for ever since we started it. Like, we started this after, I want to say we were doing this.
Jeff Hornacek, I think.
The year after the 48 win year. We did not have this during the 48 win year. We had it after the trade deadline, maybe?
I think we had it.
We'd have to ask Gibby. I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure we had it at the very end of Jeff Hornacek when he started. They fired his assistants first.
Oh my god! That's right.
Right before Earl came.
Wow, we were here for the whole Earl thing. I remember yelling in this room about Earl a lot. And Jay Triano and all that stuff. And I like Jay Triano. To that point, all we've been asking for in this podcast since we started it is just be competitive consistently. And as it turns out, that has been the message Devin and Monty and everyone have saying, like, we just want to play hard and treat every single game like it's our last, blah, blah, blah. But Devin's was basically like, we need to compete at a high level consistently. And that was Monty Williams' big speech in mid-January, early February, when the team was really starting to move downhill finally after like kind of staying afloat after the hot start. And he was just pissed and was like, I don't, like, they have to just play this way or we're not going to figure it out. John Blue made a really good point on the postgame show when I was on with him, in that you look at the bench and what they did today, you're wondering about power forward next season, and Dario has been awesome. You're wondering about backup point guard next year, and Cam Payne has been awesome. I take it more as like, this is what can happen for this team when they get this type of production out of these spots, more so with Cam Johnson and Dario in those guys, because you just, I mean, you can just look at it simply like, if Cam Payne continues to play somewhat like this, like he's not going to shoot 60-70% or whatever he's at right now, but if he shoots 45% and like 37 from three, and just keeps playing, especially like defensively and just activity wise, dribbling the ball into the lane all the time that way, then it'll be fine. You look at this team and you've got 9 legitimate NBA players on it right now, if you include Baines and Oubre.
I mean,
you've got the starting 5, Dario and Payne. I'm not counting Kaminsky, who has just been awful in the bubble, and I don't think it's been a fair representation of what he can bring to the team.
Dario's arguably, I mean, Dario, what, at the mid-March, do we think he would have come back?
No.
I don't think so.
I think he was like, there was a 0.3% chance that he was coming back, and now there's like a 40 to 60% chance,
yeah.
I would say. You have to, because it's just, it's a different player. He's just a different player. He's stronger, he's faster, and he plays like he's stronger and faster. There are guys who like change their body and then still play like timid, like they did before. But he just bullies the crap out of dudes now. He did that before, but it was like he would back a guy in and then do that little weird jumping, flailing, not drawing a foul and finishing way into the rim and missing thing. But now he's just dropping his shoulder into the dude and moving him because he's stronger now.
I like him off the bench now.
And it's looks, a different look.
When he's
yeah.
that aggressive and he's just like, okay, well, I'm going to do that. I'm going to put you under with my shoulder. It's over. Yeah, I mean, if you say they'd go draft either a point guard, like there are point guards you could throw beside Cam Payne and have two of them, that's another NBA player maybe.
Yeah,
or
I just
get a power forward or center and play Dario in small ball. Like, I don't know. This is, we're only halfway through this seeding thing, and we can talk playoffs maybe later. Yeah. But like, already looking at the next year, like, it's changed just in a wild assortment of ways, I think. Mikal is just sticking in front of guys, and then they drive on him and get to the rim, and then they're like, oh, I should be able to get a shot off, and then he just blocks them. Like, who does that?
Dude, I don't know. Him? Like, Kawhi? I don't know. Like, Mike Prada tweet today is like, when I go to hell, it's going to be me trying to score in ISO situations on Mikal Bridges, because it's just like, you have the one of the first clips, I posted two clips of TJ scoring, and the first one was Mikal getting his hands like right on TJ like four different times where he should have stolen the ball, or it was just like an annoyance, and because TJ's so good at what he does, he still managed to like get a decent shot off. But Mikal was just like, it's his hands are, not even that his hands are everywhere, it's just they're everywhere and in positions where he severely affects,
where you're
severely impacts the possession, yeah, and where he's trying to go. I feel very, very good about just writing something like a couple weeks before this started and saying like he's been playing like an all-defense player this year and just hasn't got the recognition for it, because I think he would have made all-defense if they would have held off the voting. I really think he would have, because there was already, I think Hollinger included him, I want to say. So there's a little bit of, oh, Mikal Bridges are interesting. And then you see the way that he's just defended Luka. Even if Luka went off against him, it's like Luka's going to do that to a lot of people. The way he defended Kawhi, and Kawhi got him a little bit at the end. Can't remember who he was on against Washington, but then obviously the way that he defended TJ
obviously
today.
Obviously the best
Isaac Barga,
the
Troy
Washington
Brown.
Wizards.
Troy Brown, yeah. Book's been better defensively too. We should mention that. Just like it's the same thing with him. He's either at a 14 or a 3 now, which is like, it's better than like not trying randomly all the time than being like a 14 or a 3. And now it's like, okay, Devin, now that you're really exerting yourself defensively, you need to learn to just not randomly foul people so you don't get in foul trouble anymore.
Yeah, that was a bad little run there.
The rip through on TJ in the first half, his first foul, was just one of those where it's like you're just trying to stick him through this screen too much. And it's like you're working too hard on defense. You don't want to tell that to guys. But at the same time, it's like a lot of his fouls, if you look back on them in the bubble, are just him kind of he looks like a rookie just trying to fly everywhere because he wants to win so bad and wants his defense to be a reason they're winning. I just co-signed Dario. Campaign, there's a lot of Gerald Green there where I wrote one of my favorite things I've ever written was like a, okay, so what's going on with Gerald Green exactly after the 48-win season? The conclusion, I like wrote like 1,700 words, and at the very bottom, it's like, so Gerald Green takes a lot of really bad shots, but they go in, so why does it matter if they're bad shots? Because they're going in, so are they? They're good shots if they're it's good when the ball goes in. And there's a little bit of that with him, and I'm not counting the times when he's hot and he's shooting. Like, he should be shooting. But there were a couple in the Clippers game. It was that portion of the game, the late third quarter, where he took, like, a runner that didn't go in, and then in this game he tried to set up Frank and turn it over, and there were just a couple where I was, like, not saying here we go, it's finally going to unravel, but just saying, like, there are still glimpses of why this guy wasn't an NBA player before. But with that being said, he is clearly, from, like, talking to him and hearing him talk, but also just with the way he plays, he is clearly taking on a new approach to basketball. And Devin said something interesting, which was like, he got really good perspective on the pace of the game now and just how to play it properly. And the most .5-y he's played was in this game. He had like a drive and kick where he was on the left in the left corner, dribbled it down the baseline, then found someone on the right wing. And like, me, you, and a lot of people listening can like see a pass before it's there. I didn't even see that, and it's right in front of me. And I was like, "Whoa!" Like that was just a really good look.
None of his shots really, to me anyway, they don't seem like they're off the cuff and out of rhythm of the game.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Like if he misses a floater or he takes like three floaters in a row, it's like, well, he was open for that and he can hit that. I mean, it's nothing I saw was super concerning in that regard. And when he's not doing that, well, he should do that because they don't have much offense, obviously, but like,
he's gotten a steal in every game, too.
The offense doesn't really get off track.
No.
I feel like it hasn't been, at least.
Because he's playing .5, but within his own way where he tries to score offensively.
Yeah,
so
he doesn't. It's not like he's getting off the dribble and getting by the guys quick. It's not like he's trying too hard to do
it. He could average 20 points a game the last four. They should get another guard still. They should get a third guard and not have it be him. That would be a mistake to rely on the sample size. And look, is that Mike James, Alfred Payton PTSD? You betcha, buddy. You bet your bottom dollar that's why I'm saying that. But also, it's like, it's just such a huge need for this team that I really don't like the vision of like Tyrese Haliburton and him competing for the first guard spot off the bench.
No, both of them together.
Yeah, I really like the Kennard just made a lot of sense. And just to kind of speak to how impactful that spot can be, just seeing how he swung that game and just controlled it offensively, like that's kind of how you picture Kennard just getting hot with a couple of jumpers and then making a really good pass or two and just keeping the defense on its toes. I thought he was really good. I do not want to have this full conversation right now because I think it's a really good conversation to have for the upcoming months, which, as it turns out, is going to be the next like 3 months because the season's going to be back in December, apparently, for now. I'm not saying that it's like a corona's going to ruin everything, but just like with the current planning they have in place, that's where they're at. The Phoenix Suns are starting Ricky Rubio, Devin Booker, Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, and DeAndre Ayton. Kevin, I'm going to ask you two questions. The first one, should this be the starting lineup on opening night next year?
No.
I really want to say yes, but I just don't.
What do you do with Kelly?
I think Kelly's got to start.
Yes.
If he's here, he's got to start.
Yeah. You can stagger things where he's essentially your sixth man anyway.
What's going on with Cam starting that we're not seeing? Is it really this simple? That's what I'm trying to say. And a lot of people right now are screaming at their devices saying, yes, it is that simple. He spaces the floor. He shoots. He really works hard. He's defending okay for a rookie. You can't really pick on him that much. He's just working really hard, and it's so important how much he spaces the floor and gives
rebounds.
He's rebounding really well, which is clearly like there was a – speaking of TJ, there was like a moment in Warren's time where it was clear that he was just – he was like one of the top five best offensive rebounders in the league, like among all players, not even just centers, for a while, for like a 3-month stretch, because he was just like, okay, I guess I'm just going to crash the glass all the time now. And that's what clearly what Cam is doing. Is there that's what I'm saying. Is it really that simple? Because it just feels like there's just some matchup problem where it shouldn't be as easy as putting him at the four, and they're just going to get bullied in certain matchups. But if they're playing, I don't think it's that either, because if you're playing your game and spacing the floor with him on offense, it's like you're just trying to beat them on offense, and you're going to with him.
I mean, I'm just looking at it as a matchup perspective. So he's bracketed basically by Mikal, who's a freak defender. So he's on the best player. Well, DeAndre's on the bigger player.
Well, it would
so
be
it's between...
Kelly. It would be Kelly at the start of next year if we're going with what we're talking about.
Oh. Right, what are you saying?
I'm asking, like, should Cam start next year, too? That's what I'm saying. Should it be Mikal and Kelly or Cam and Mikal?
Well, I'm just saying,
Cam
like...
Kelly.
I was just saying that as far as you can't not start
no,
Kelly.
That's a good place to... Yeah, because we shouldn't extend too far in the conversation. That's a good place to put it.
You can't... I was thinking too much about just, like, Cam defensive matchups. You can't,
that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing. I just...
I don't care about that. That's what I guess.
I think that's where I'm at, too. I'm just not trying to lean all the way in, but David Nash has been the number one guy on Twitter just saying, like, he's not leaving the starting lineup with what he's doing. And I'm kind of...
This is not a basketball conversation for me. If we're talking about pure basketball, then... If you say Cam's the like higher paid vet guy, then absolutely.
But, right. Okay. I see what you're saying. Like Kelly has to start because, yeah.
Yeah.
You're still getting what... I want to say you're still getting what you get out of Mikal, but his defense has been so good that maybe not. Maybe he should start. I think Mikal being a competent three-point shooter changes things.
Yeah.
If he's a 38% guy, which he has been since that Boston game, which was in mid-January... And Kelly is still around 36-37%. That's just enough shooting. And the biggest development of this whole conversation has been Rubio's a 50% three-point shooter all of a sudden. He's been sneaky great on catch and shoot this year. He's the Suns' best catch and shoot three-point shooter this year, which is just nuts. And is just like a crazy uptick of like 14% or 9 or just some crazy, like his numbers were never that good type of deal. So he obviously changes things because then you've just got three. If you've just got three average shooters, DeAndre and Devin, I think that's enough. But Cam certainly helps. And
DeAndre's shooting threes, it helps.
Yeah. I pointed out in the story I wrote for Cam starting, and like, just picture a competent Rui Hachimura on defense here. Like, he's not going to swipe at the ball because he doesn't give a crap because he's on defense, but. A competent guy would have not even swiped at the ball when Devin's going by, because if he swipes at the ball, Devin's just throwing it behind him to Cam, who's wide open from three. And there were clearly a couple moments in the Wizards game, and I'll have to rewatch the Pacers game to see if they were doing this. I think they weren't, because Indiana was just all over Devin the entire time, more than any other team we've seen so far in the bubble. But they were working a lot with Devin on Cam's side and basically saying, like, if you're going to get help from the strong corner, go ahead, but you're leaving the 40% three-point shooter who's in the NBA because he's a 40% three-point shooter. I'm not trying to say he's just a shooter, but you get what I'm saying. Like, yeah. The main value of this guy is a shooter. Try and prevent that value as much as you can if you're the opposition, is what I'm saying. But
And they left him a lot, too.
They're leaving him a lot.
Human nature, you can't not help when Devin Booker blows by a dude.
No, it's DeAndre most of the time. It's just, yeah. We saw that even in his rookie year when he was way more timid. It was still like from the first game, it was like he's so large and so fast, the help just has to come.
Yeah.
It just has to, because you're a basketball player and you see the 7-foot-1 guy moving like that, or 6'11", or whatever they're listing him as now. And you just have to help. So... Do you think it will be the starting lineup? One of these, will they not add a prominent name on the wing and Kelly will be back, is basically what I'm saying. prediction.
I'm going to guess that those guys are all back, yeah. Because if you say Aaron Gordon,
it's
do you take the risk? Like, because it's going to be that caliber guy, right? I don't think they add anyone without trading Kelly or Mikel. I don't know who beyond Aaron Gordon, and I don't even know if Aaron Gordon would make this team. That probably makes it not... I don't know if it makes it better. So, like, if you came back and said Gallinari, if you came back and said, like, who else is
Bertans
there?
Bertans is the only guy where I'm grabbing him. You don't think so?
I don't even like that much if Cam Johnson does what he does and does other stuff.
Bertans is really good. He's really, really good. I agree. I think with the way... It is so difficult for me.
If they throw that much money out there, I would be surprised too.
It's so tough to get there because Mikel improving like he has since quarantine changes it significantly, but then Cam has done the same thing. So it's such a radically different conversation because now it's like my whole thesis, quote unquote, on Cam, and I sat in this very chair on draft night and just said over and over, like, I don't understand this. Like, where is he going to play? If you add another forward to the mix, like, he doesn't have anywhere to play. Like, right now he's at 36 minutes and he's playing like 35, 40 a night, but that's because Kelly's not playing. But when Kelly comes back, those guys are going to be 22 to 34 minutes for the three of them, and it's just going to depend on who's going and how often they go small. Rubio's minutes have stayed down, which is a credit to Payne because Payne has played the other 22, but I imagine there'll be some point book mixed in next year or the other point guard or if it's Payne or whatever. So there'll be opportunities to get them. But I mapped that out in the something I've written so many things in the past like 6 weeks, but there was something where I just like literally outlined the minutes and I was like, this is how you get Cam to like 18, and this is difficult. So it's adding another forward. It's just different now because of how well he's playing and how clearly he fits for the team.
I don't worry about finding minutes if a player is that good, though, at some point.
Right.
Like,
that's a good point.
If Kelly and Mikel and Cam come back next year and they're all a little bit better, that's why I don't, especially how this front office has acted, I don't think that they're going to feel like they have to go do something unless that player is really that good, because I don't see why those guys can't, like, I don't know, we saw it with the Kelly Mikel five-man lineup with the plus minus, we see it with Cam right now. I think they're in a good spot in that regard, and I don't, that's why I think they're going to run it back to some degree. I don't know, I just can't see an avenue to making a big trade, and then you talk about financials and you talk about this weird off season where it might inhibit how they act and the time they have to act and think through things. I don't know. It's still a Devin DeAndre thing. That's what ultimately matters. And you're right there.
I think so. All right, playoff picture to close it out. Can't believe we're doing this, but we are.
Your mind looks like it's breaking.
Suns are 30-39. Devin Booker's finally won 30 games this season, by the way.
Did I say 28 wins this season or 30?
I believe I said 29. That was my number, so I don't know about yours, but...
Hey, we can be wrong.
I don't want to throw the Devin Booker's finally won 30 games in his career tweet out there. We're having too much fun. We don't need to do that. We were already doing the four-game win streak thing. So they are two games out from Memphis. The most annoying thing about this entire process, and I think fans are going to start to get more and more aggravated, is that there's this weird thing where it's going to go by win percentage because some teams have played less games than others, and like the Blazers are the biggest beneficiary of this because they have played less. I believe that's the way it works out. But they're two back of the Grizzlies, who are 0-4. They lost Jaren Jackson Jr. Their schedule is impossible. But the wild card that has been tossed into our lives is what happened today and what's going to happen tomorrow. Because the Blazers played the Nuggets tonight, who were already without four starters in the game. and then they went on to leave out their other four stars. So they had four guys regularly in their starting lineup who were out of the game already. In came a new starting five. Four of those five guys went on to not play in crunch time when the Blazers were like up like three, because Mike Malone was like, it's just whatever. It's don't care what seed we get. Meanwhile, the Blazers are playing for their life. Dame's hitting 11 threes and they won. Tomorrow, the Jazz do not have Royce O'Neal, Donovan Mitchell, or Rudy Gobert. They play the Spurs. So it's going to start to get in this weird spot of teams are just clearly like, okay, we've practiced enough together and we've played enough games. Now it's time to just make sure we get into the playoffs healthy, which is going to severely impact this, because in the way where the bubble is awesome because there's great teams playing every night, now you're playing a great team every night that wants to remain a great team by staying healthy. So they're going to sit all their important guys. LeBron sat tonight. Russell Westbrook sat tonight.
And the Suns are not playing any of those teams that we would not appear like they're okay. Miami, Oklahoma City, Philadelphia, Dallas. Miami's a little banged up, so that could go in their favor, but Miami does not mess around, and Miami's still very good.
They were taking it to the Bucks early before the Bucks like kind of turned
Adebayo
it on.
Bio does stuff because other guys are hurt and he's fine with it.
Ben Simmons is out right now. I cannot imagine they're going to play him for the rest of the seeding portion with his knee situation.
They're kind of a mess, so that might be good. So I don't know what the Thunder
the reason I
are doing,
say that,
but,
though,
I mean,
is like
yeah.
the Grizzlies have this awful schedule where like everyone's like they're screwed, and it's like, I don't know, man. Like if the Bucks start, I don't even know. Whoever their ninth man, like if they
Robin
start
Robin Lopez,
yeah, Giannis's center. Brother Thanasis is the starting two guard in that game. Like who knows what happens, you know? So I don't even. That's why I bring it up to close out the podcast, because this is even more unpredictable than I thought it was going to be, because I don't know how to treat this. The only way I can treat it, and how I've been telling people like the last like 2 days who have been turning themselves into Suns fans, as people will, we're not calling you bandwagoners. It's been hard over here. We understand why you were away. It's good to have you back. People starting. So I've had a lot of friends and like family members just kind of reach out and be like, wow, this is so great. Yeah. So how can they make the playoffs again? And then I just basically put it as they just have to stay ahead of teams. If the Suns go 8-0, there's a pretty good chance that they're going to make either the 8 seed or the 9 seed. If they go 7-1, they are going to have to get very lucky.
Yeah.
Even if they lose one game, they're just going to have to get lucky.
Portland has a pretty similar schedule to them. Clippers, Sixers,
I believe,
Mavs, Nets, which is...
I believe if Memphis goes 2-2 and Portland goes 3-1, that's it.
Yeah.
It's over already, yeah. I believe.
Just ignoring the teams behind Phoenix right now.
So that's what I'm saying, in that they are ahead of the Kings and they're ahead of the Pelicans, and if the Spurs lose tomorrow, which again, the Jazz are playing their towel boy as the starting point guard, probably. So shout out Georges Niang, who's going to take 27 shots in that game. If the Spurs lose tomorrow, then they're officially behind the Suns, and it's like, great, now you just have to get ahead of Portland or ahead of Memphis and then just don't look back. But it feels like they've made up so much ground, but that game and a half is just so big at the moment with Portland. It's pretty circumstantial. Portland has the Clippers, Philly, Dallas, and Brooklyn to close it out. Brooklyn's been feisty so far without everyone. Mm-hmm. Dallas has looked like crap for the most part. Philly is always all over the place, and then
who knows?
The Clippers have just been picked the day, really, but they've got Montrez and Lou to get back into.
Is Montrez back?
I don't even think Montrez is back yet, and like Lou looked like he insert
a day after
wing
the
joke.
Wings, yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. I'm too tired to really commit to it. What's cool is seeing the streak right now in the West and seeing that the only team that has won more than two games in a row right now is the Suns, and they've won four in a row. That's pretty neat. But no, this is it's very, very difficult, and everyone
6-8% from like Pelton to 538, so say 6-8%.
Pelton just updated Gambo on Twitter in his like daily tweet to Gambo updating the odds. 13%.
Oh, it's 13
up to now. All the way up to 13, yeah. Which, man, it tells you how important that Blazers win was for Portland, because if it goes up to 13 with Portland winning, you can imagine what it would have went up to with them losing. And you think about the games that they had, like they had that really, they had the overtime win, I believe. Yeah, they had the overtime win against Memphis. They had a close win against the Rockets. and then they had a close, they like pulled away from the Nuggets, and then they barely lost to the Celtics. So like they're playing really well. And like in my whole spiel about this whole thing leading up to it, like Damian Lillard is the best player by far of those groups. No shade at Devin Booker. I think I wouldn't say he would admit, he would never admit, or he doesn't think that Dame's better than him, but Dame is just like a certified all NBA. He's like been first team all NBA like two of the past 3 years or whatever. Like he's really, really good.
I would say,
and
he's good.
Having him matters more than a lot of things. And they have Nurkic and Collins, and Carmelo's doing stuff for them.
Surprisingly, very competent team over there. Actually, I haven't mentioned them. Yeah,
Portland.
Yeah,
yeah.
They look pretty good. I thought they would be a little clunky with those new guys. Well, the old guys coming back, but not so.
I'm really glad the Suns are doing this, because I would just be depressed about Zion, like, all the time if I wasn't just
check out that plus minus.
Dude, I had Markel, like Markel was just like 2 years ago Fultz, and now it's like this stuff, and it's like, I don't know about the people who like watched him at Duke, I don't know if it's apparent to like even you, like I just think it's so clear that he's moving differently and is just like a different athlete than he was. And I don't know if it's meniscus, I don't know if it's because he's put on weight, people are just calling him fat and saying he needs to lose weight or whatever. I thought Rich had a really good thread that was basically saying like he's growing into his man's body now and it needs to be adjusted accordingly, because he was just on baby bones and was 18 at Duke and could just fly around and do whatever he wanted, rip off the shoes and be fine. But now they got to figure something out there, man, because he's...
I'm getting a little worried.
And the funny thing is he played like 23 minutes today and had 24 points anyway, because he's still a monster, but only playing at like 60 or 50% as a monster.
And they're clearly worried about him.
They clearly are, and they clearly suck on defense still. Oh, my God. 140 from the Kings. Yikes. This was fun. I like being in the room.
I like basketball that makes me think about basketball stuff and not incompetent people at their jobs.
We should try and do this again for the next couple. Bossman, if you're listening, please let us in the building. We will be safe and wear masks and wipe things down.
We wore masks all the way here.
We did. My mask is right over there. We're going to wear them once we end the podcast, which will be right now. Thanks for listening, everyone. At Empire of the Suns on Twitter. I'm at Kellen Olson, KELLANOLSON. I've written a story every day since the Suns got to the bubble, and
Brian
that is going to continue. I am driving myself insane either way. Even when the Suns are good, I'm still going to find a way to drive myself insane with the Suns, and that has just been by writing a lot. So
you're
going to
be gassed if they make the playoffs, huh, buddy?
Please read. Can you imagine, just like the thought, like when Matt Lehman, our coworker, sent me a Nashville Predators like playoff series preview, I was like, imagine doing this for the Suns. That would be so cool. Hey, LeBron James is pretty good. Watch out for that guy. All right. See you later, everyone. Oh, you're at K Zimmerman AZ. We didn't even plug you, Kevin.
Oh.
What's going on with the Cardinals? When do they start?
I don't know.
If you guys haven't figured this out by now, following us on Twitter, by the way, we cover other teams. So, like, we're sorry for putting baseball and football tweets and all that kind of stuff, like hockey tweets. But I've always been a fan of all the teams anyway, like growing up I was. So it was always going
to,
like...
I don't feel sorry. I had to get over
you
some...
You shouldn't. When does camp start? Like, a couple of days, right?
It's technically started.
Are you really there with football where you're just like, whatever? Like,
I mean,
good try, everyone. It's
testing for coronavirus isn't my forte.
Oh my
gosh. Covering it is not. Anyway.
We always have to find, even when the Suns are just like the best moment in years, we always have to find a way to just bring it down. I'm really excited for Saturday's game to close out on a more positive note. Just Bam versus DeAndre. Bam's one of my favorite guys to watch in the league. He's awesome. And I just really excited, especially with the way DeAndre played in the last game. And just Miami's like Indiana, like you said. Spo just has them well-oiled machine every single year. They play a certain way. Mikel's going to have fun running 4 miles in this game, chasing around Duncan Robinson the entire time if Jimmy Butler's not playing. So.
I just still waiting for the DeAndre Ayton game.
Philly on Monday?
I don't think he did that poorly.
Is it Philly on Monday or OKC on Monday?
OKC is the next one.
Okay.
So yeah, that's
I would really like to think like that's far enough, that's close enough to the playoffs and far enough into this where Embiid won't play, hopefully. Because if you have not watched Philly, like, yes, they're a mess, but oh my God, that guy like might be one of like the 3 or 5 best players in the league right now. He's nuts. He's so good. All right. Well, we speak of things always changing on a week to week based on this podcast, and oh boy, I hope we're still there next week. So yeah, Saturday, Monday, Tuesday, maybe after Monday's game, One of those is Mondays is at like 11:30 in the morning. That's probably we'll do it after Monday's game.
I can't look that far in the future, man.
It's Thursday, apparently. I just learned that. Okay, bye, everyone.